Radio listeners, this is Red Alert, brought to you by the Masters of Disasters here on WSPN. The program we have for you today is like no other in that it is the very first of our series. Over the next few weeks, on Tuesdays from 5 to 6, large amounts of knowledge will pass from this small, basement-located radio station out to the public. And we're not talking about fun facts or celebrity breakups. We're talking seriously amazing natural disaster-related knowledge. That's right, every episode will be dedicated to informing you about a specific natural disaster. And it gives us great pleasure to say we're kicking off our series with today's episode focused on, what could it be? Hurricanes! Yes! Hurricanes, also known as typhoons and tropical cyclones. So, let's get this program started. This next part of the show, we're going to break down the process of development that a hurricane undergoes, and we'll also determine the distinctions that make a hurricane a Category 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 storm. After observing the impact on hurricanes on society in the past, many people know that a hurricane is generally a powerful storm capable of destroying almost anything. Yes, this observation is correct, but there is far more to a hurricane than the average person knows. A hurricane is a form of a large tropical cyclone that converts heat energy from tropical oceans into wind and waves, two out of many characteristics of a hurricane. When heat builds up in the tropics during the summer, hurricane season becomes active typically during the months of June and November as storms begin to develop. In order for a hurricane to form, four requirements must be met. First, seawater should be at least 80 degrees Fahrenheit, as deep as 200 feet into the ocean from the surface of the water. Second, air above the ocean must be warm, humid, and unstable enough to sustain convection, or the rising of warm air. Third, upper-level winds in the atmosphere should be weak and blowing in the same direction that the developing storm is moving. These three conditions create waves of thunderstorms, but it takes more to organize these everyday storms into a whirling hurricane or typhoon. This leads to the last requirement. There must be a Coriolis effect to spin the system. Many of you are probably asking what the Coriolis effect is. The Coriolis effect is a force that causes wind to spin in a spiraling motion, allowing for the formation of a hurricane. This effect begins when the storm spins in a counterclockwise direction around a central core in the northern hemisphere. converging winds meet at the central core, sending warm, moist air up towards the stratosphere, a region of the upper atmosphere. After reaching high altitude, the moist air cools and reaches dew point temperatures, allowing water vapor to condense into clouds and release heat. This heat warms the surrounding air, causing warm air from the lower atmosphere to rise even faster. As a result, the rate of condensation production also increases. So, as the storm begins to spin, it becomes a heat engine, where heat moving up from the ocean to the atmosphere draws even more air into the storm. This explains the reason why hurricanes carry so much water. In general, the Coriolis effect is the basis of hurricane development. Eventually, the central core of the storm becomes the eye of the hurricane, where winds are the strongest and most dangerous. The water vapor that accumulates forms rain bands of spiraling clouds that surround the eye. These bands contain the most intense rainfall, but the central eye of the warm, dry air remains calm and free of clouds. Once all these factors are established, a tropical cyclone is fully developed. However, the storm must undergo certain phases of strength in order to be classified as a tropical disturbance, tropical depression, tropical storm, or Category 1 to 5 hurricane. The beginnings of a hurricane are first seen in a tropical disturbance, which includes a pressure zone that draws in a poorly organized cluster of thunderstorms with weak surface winds. The next phase up is a tropical depression, in which the surface winds of a disturbance strengthen and flow more efficiently around and into the center of the developing storm. As the depression gets stronger, it may evolve into a tropical storm. A tropical cyclone will be classified as a tropical storm when wind speeds begin to exceed 39 miles per hour. After wind speeds exceed 74 miles per hour, the storm will be classified as a hurricane. Now, you may ask, what's the difference between a Category 1 hurricane and a Category 5 hurricane? Well, no worries. We're going to explain all that classification now. The weakest form of a hurricane is a Category 1 storm, in which sustained winds fall in the range of 74 to 95 miles per hour. During this type of hurricane, damage does occur, but minimally. Common destruction includes the damaging of trees and unanchored mobile homes as a result of the strong winds. The next strongest category of hurricanes are those that fall in Category 2. Sustained winds reach 96 to 110 miles per hour, causing a greater amount of damage than a Category 1 storm. Destruction that may occur during a Category 2 storm includes trees blown down, major damage to mobile homes, and damage to some roofs of houses and buildings. An example of this type of storm is Hurricane Katrina, when it moved over Lake Pontchartrain. A little bit stronger than a Category 2 hurricane is a Category 3 storm, of which sustained winds reach 111 to 130 miles per hour. The wind gusts in this type of storm are capable of producing major damage to the environment, including blowing down large trees, stripping foliage, destroying mobile homes, and causing structural damage to small buildings. Hurricane Katrina was also a Category 3 storm when it hit Mississippi. The second strongest type of hurricane is a Category 4 storm. A hurricane reaches this level when sustained winds fall between 131 and 155 miles per hour. With a storm this strong, catastrophic damage can occur, such as all street signs being blown down, heavy destruction to windows, doors, and roofs of houses and buildings. Flooding also extends miles inland, causing great damage to coastal buildings. An example of a Category 4 storm is Hurricane Charley, which hit Florida at full strength in 2004. The strongest, most dangerous hurricane is that of a Category 5 storm. This category includes any storms with sustained winds that exceed 155 miles per hour, capable of destroying entire communities. The aftermath of the storm will result in severe damages to windows, doors, and roofs. Small buildings may be overturned or even blown away. There will also be major damage to all coastal buildings less than 15 feet above sea level as a result of heavy flooding. An example of a Category 5 storm is Hurricane Wilma, which made landfall in Florida in 2005. Generally, Category 1 and 2 storms are called minimal hurricanes that cause lesser amounts of damage. Categories 3 and 4 are known as major hurricanes, and while they are far more rare, they cause a vast majority of damage. It is quite obvious that hurricanes are extremely powerful forces of nature, capable of destroying almost anything in their path. Therefore, it is important to be up to date on weather forecasts and take a threatening storm seriously in order to stay safe and prevent as much damage as possible. All right, listeners, we're going to take a break and turn on some tunes, but keep listening for some intriguing hurricane stories.
Thank you. morning. Smile with the rising sun. Three little birds. It's by my doorstep. Singing sweet songs. Of melodies pure and true. Saying,
this is my message to you.
Singing, don't worry about a thing. Cause every little thing's gonna be alright. Singing, don't worry about a thing. Cause every little thing's gonna be alright.
Rise up this morning. With the rising sun, three little birds, it's by my doorstep, singing sweet songs of melodies pure and true, saying,
this is my message to you.
WSPN 91.1. Welcome back to Red Alert, brought to you by the Masters of Disaster, where we're about to talk about predicting paths of hurricanes. So, say a hurricane is coming towards you. The first thing you probably want to know is where and when it's going to hit. Unfortunately, those aren't very easy questions to answer, considering the path of a hurricane can't be predicted with pinpoint accuracy. However, there are several relatively accurate ways to predict a hurricane's path. One method is to use a climate and persistence statistical regression equation. This math equation uses past hurricane data and current atmospheric conditions to create a most probable path. This was used until the 1980s, but is now used only as a comparison for other models. Two more accurate methods are the NHC-90 and the beta advection model, which both use data taken from hurricane thunderstorm planes that fly over the storms. The planes will take several measurements in multiple days of the storm. These are better ways to predict a storm's path. However, they aren't always 100% correct. A matter of fact, when a hurricane is 5 days from hand, the average error of predicted landfall is 350 miles. This error decreases by 60 miles each day until it is 2 days away. At that point, the error is 160 miles, and then 100 miles the day before. Meteorologists know about this error in effect and use it as a cone to represent the hurricane's path. The small end of the cone starts out next to the hurricane, and then it widens until it gets to shore, showing a broader path as the prediction gets closer. But say there's a family that knows there's a hurricane coming, but they have no way to receive any detailed warning once it gets close. Let's say they're the Swiss Family Robinson. If they know something about current weather conditions around them, they can make a somewhat accurate prediction of the storm's path. Important weather aspects that are helpful to know when predicting a storm's path are the temperature of the ocean, where it is before it hits land, the atmospheric pressure around you, and the wind conditions. Typically, when a hurricane heads toward the U.S., the subtropical jet stream pushes it northeast as it speeds up. The high pressure along the coast weakens as the low pressure storm system moves closer. This isn't a good sign because the moving high pressure area is opening up at a spot for the hurricane to go. As it gets closer to shore, the winds ahead of the storm usually blow from southwest to northeast, pushing the storm north. But keep in mind that if you're in a large, high area, high pressure system along the shore and it's not moving, it could block the hurricane or change its path. Using this knowledge, you can create a somewhat educated guess of where the hurricane's going to move. So, even though hurricane paths aren't necessarily 100% accurate in their prediction, and though the use of prediction models and the comparison of each prediction, the process is becoming more reliable. The best approach when a hurricane or typhoon threatens is to look up the NHC's predicted storm path cone and use the lead time to prepare yourself and ensure your safety. Now, coming up, we have the damaging effects of hurricanes. Welcome back to Red Alert, brought to you by the Masters of Disaster. It's time we moved on to a segment about what hurricanes can do, their impact on us, and how they are so damaging. Before getting into specifics, let's consider some important statistics that will help give scope to the raw power of hurricanes. In terms of economic damage, the average cost of the top five most damaging hurricanes in the United States is $92.24 billion per incident. With that amount of money, you could purchase 4,612 million Shed Rain Windjammer auto open umbrellas available in navy and red. Or you could bail out a major American financial institution. On a more serious note, though, the average number of fatalities in the top five deadliest hurricanes in America is 3,417 people per incident. This is significantly larger than the undergrad population of Skidmore. Over the previous 105-year span, from 1900 to 2005, an average of 196 people have died per year from hurricanes. What do all these numbers tell us? That hurricanes are a perennial threat to be taken seriously. A reason hurricanes are so dangerous is that they have many different damaging effects. For example, one significant effect of hurricanes is heavy rainfall. Often taken for granted, heavy rainfall can cause deadly landslides, mudslides, and inland flooding. Ed Rappaport, recent acting director of the National Hurricane Center, is quoted as saying, "In the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, inland flooding was responsible for more than half the deaths associated with tropical cyclones in the United States." Another major contributor to flooding and another damaging effect of hurricanes, is a storm surge. Aptly named, a storm surge is an abnormal rise of seawater associated with low-pressure weather systems. As the storm approaches shore, heavy swell, tides, and huge waves rise on top of the storm surge, often raising sea level above the normal waterline. It might not sound deadly, but globally, storm surges are responsible for 90% of deaths during hurricanes. A telling example of the devastation storm surges can cause is Hurricane Katrina, which we will discuss in the next segment of the program. Besides heavy rain, flooding, and storm surges, hurricanes can spawn high wind speeds over 100 miles per hour. Hurricane Camille from 1969 recorded wind speeds of 190 miles per hour, only 40 miles per hour less than the highest wind speeds recorded on Earth. Winds at those speeds can demolish cars, mobile homes, buildings, houses, bridges, and pretty much any structure that isn't an underground cement bunker built with reinforced steel. Even then, it might get a little drafty. One reason scientists are trying to figure out whether global warming will make hurricanes more intense is that wind damages increase as a cube of wind speed. This means that a small increase in wind strength can cause a large increase in hurricane damages. Lastly, there is something admittedly crazy sounding that a hurricane can produce: rogue waves. Now, I know for some people, rogue conjures up images of a fictional Marvel Comics X-Men character whose mutant abilities enable her to absorb strength, memories, and abilities from anyone she touches. Here, this is not what rogue means. A rogue wave is a wave whose height is more than twice the average height of the largest third of waves in wave record. Yes, that sentence used the word wave four times. It's not perfect, but it's more precise than saying really big. In 2004, Hurricane Ivan caused such a wave, although it did not reach shore. Still, ocean floor pressure sensors detected the wave was around 91 feet high and 660 feet long. Watch out, cruise ships! As you can tell from these examples and previously mentioned statistics, hurricanes are a natural disaster of the utmost seriousness. They are powerful enough to incur billions of dollars of damage, kill thousands of people, and generate extreme weather conditions. Up next, a closer look at Hurricane Katrina with an interview from Katrina and New Orleans survivor Lauren Trostorf. But here, some music. In August 2005, Hurricane Katrina formed over the Bahamas. In less than a week, it would dissipate, having killed over 1,800 people, caused $81 billion in damages, and having left the city of New Orleans profoundly changed. A combination of rainfall and storm surges breached the poorly maintained city levees and flooded low-lying parts of New Orleans. Reconstruction continues today. Days ago, I interviewed Lauren Trostorf, who lived in New Orleans at the time of Hurricane Katrina, evacuated, and came back to find a different city.
That Saturday morning, I remember I was at my friend's house, and I woke up to my friend, like, getting a text message or something. She, like, turned on the news, and she was like, the eye of the hurricane is, like, coming right for us. And I was like, what? I was like, what eye? Because I totally forgotten.
How soon did you evacuate, and, like, where did you go?
Well, see, I've evacuated before because, okay. Like, a few times, a bunch of times, really, for a hurricane, and we evacuated Sunday morning. I left early that morning, and there was supposed to be really bad traffic, but it actually wasn't, like, that bad, considering.
Yeah.
And then we were originally going to go to Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah.
And, we stopped in Oxford, Mississippi.
Oh, wow. And how long did you have to, like, stay before you could come back to the city?
I actually came back the weekend of Halloween. My school was one of the first ones to reopen in New Orleans. It opened October 24th. I went back to visit the weekend of Halloween, and my mom was like, you can only visit, like, we're not going back. There wasn't that many people back.
Yeah, and what was it like when you got back? Like, what did it, like, visually, like, what did the city look like?
Well, one thing about New Orleans is it's really, like, lush. It was always, like, covered in trees, like, St. Charles Avenue, there was, like, a huge, and it's kind of back again, but huge, like, canopy of trees over, and I remember that it just seemed so open, and it was so weird because there was, like, you could, like, see the sky so much better, and there were just, like, tree branches, like, everywhere missing. And I remember one of my friends who stayed for the storm, he lives a block off of St. Charles, and there were so many branches and things that were that had been, like, falling off the trees, like, huge ones, that he couldn't even make it to St. Charles, like, walk in, because there's so many. So that's one thing. And another thing was the city, like, stank, because everyone had their refrigerators out on the streets, like, taped up, and the city just smelled, like, really, really bad.
Oh, gosh. And, like, since then, like, how long has it taken? And do you think it's, like, close to back to where it was? Like, I visited 2 years ago, and there's a huge difference between downtown and just, like, going out to, like, the different wards. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, well, another thing about what it looks like really quick is that also, like, there were water, like, in still some parts of the city, there are water lines.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just, like, one of the big things. There's water lines everywhere. I mean, my house didn't get flooded, but a lot of my friends' houses did.
Yeah.
And just, like, in areas, and I remember, like, getting off of I-10 in some areas, there were just, like, water lines near cemeteries, and it was just really weird to see the different points, because there would be more than one water line, one from, like, the highest point, and then when the water kept falling. But a big change, I mean, I think it's come back a lot. It's different just because some neighborhoods, like the Ninth Ward, like, those are just, I mean, I'd never really been there before Katrina, but I mean, it doesn't really, like, exist anymore, kind of, but not really. Lakeview, there are still houses where are still lots that are emptied from it. I mean, it's come back a lot, especially in, you know, certain areas, and the population has come back a lot, but it's just different in terms of people. Not really, but it's kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not something that, unless you were, like, really a part of the areas that haven't come back that you really...
Yeah, that would really notice. And did it have any, like, when you got back, are there any, like, did it have any effect on, like, your normal, like, routines? Like, did you have to do anything differently or, like, compensate for the effects of the hurricane?
I mean, the city just seemed really different.
Yeah.
Really, really different for a while. And at school, I went to an all-girls school, a small all-girls school, and, I mean, we had some boys come to our school for the time being because not all schools were open, so some boys came, were allowed for a semester, and our class was just really small. Our class got a lot closer.
Yeah.
Some people I knew moved away. I mean, what else? I mean, a lot of my friends lived in areas whose houses were completely destroyed, and this one girl in my grade, you know, she almost just moved back into a house because she was in a trailer for, like, a really long time.
Yeah.
And at school, they would just, like, constantly shove down our throats, like, are you okay? Like, da, 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 and we would just always have to talk about it, that we were almost just, like, so sick of talking about it.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, no problem.
Again, that was Lauren Trostorf, living in New Orleans at the time of Hurricane Katrina. We have some music, then we'll come back with interesting hurricane facts.
Hey everyone, this is DJ Magic Brown here on WSPN 91.1 FM. Alright, here are some interesting hurricane facts for all you out there. In one day, a hurricane can release enough energy to supply all of the nation's electricity for 6 months. A large hurricane can stir more than 1 million cubic miles of the atmosphere every second. September is the busiest month for hurricanes in the Atlantic, and the longest Category 5 hurricane lasted 28 days. The hurricane with the most tornadoes was 2004 Frances, with 123 tornadoes. Hurricanes can have a diameter up to 500 miles. The eye can be up to 20 miles in diameter. In fact, the smallest hurricane could fit in the eye of the largest. 50% of deaths occurred during hurricanes revolt from drowning floods, and a hurricane rapidly weakens when it hits land. The word hurricane comes from ancient Mayan hurricane, the god of big winds and evil spirits. Storms in the North Atlantic or Caribbean are called hurricanes. Storms in the Western Pacific Ocean are called typhoons, and storms over the Indian Ocean are called cyclones. A storm is classified as a hurricane when its winds surpass 74 miles an hour. The average life of a hurricane is 9 days. Hurricanes were first named in the 19th century by an Australian weatherman, Clement Ragg, who named the storms after people he disliked. And now, here is a story game with Aubrey.
Hello, this is Aubrey, and I'd like to start off by acquainting the audience with some of the stories that appear in response to hurricanes. But first, we must warn you that these stories are extremely ridiculous and all seem unreal, of which most are. We are going to tell you about 4 different situations and then have a caller guess on which situation actually happened at any point in time, and which stories are just spoofs. The first story happens on Sunday, February 18, 2007. A Florida woman who lost her power due to hurricane damage has finally regained electricity, CBS 4 reported this weekend. Sound normal? Well, the hurricane that knocked out her power was Hurricane Andrew, which hit 15 years ago. The woman, who didn't want her full name released, has been living in her Cutler Bay home without power since August 24, 1992. That means no air conditioning during the sweltering summer heat, no heat during cold swings that Florida sometimes experiences during the winter, and no hot water for showers every morning. I think it's like everything. You learn how to step into it and wait, and when you feel it, you take your quick shower, she told CBS 4. Why did she go so long? Soon after the hurricane hit, money from her insurance settlement ran out, and the contractor stopped working. Her home was left half repaired and not up to government code, meaning electricity couldn't be hooked up. Since she didn't have money to finish the repairs, she only had one option: live with it. For roughly 15 years, her story went unnoticed. Then, someone tipped off the city and Miami-Dade Mayor Carlos Alvarez. After a few hours of work by volunteers and an inspection, there was power. She said the first thing she plans to do is take a hot bubble bath. Now, moving on to the second hurricane-related article. This one occurs Saturday, 16th of August, 2008, in Coral Gables, Miami. Florida announced this morning that Ebonic names will be given to hurricanes in 2009. They have decided to do this in interest of maintaining a fair and balanced list of names issued to tropical cyclones. The list of names for 2009 is Aquanita, Bactrine, Shatiqua, Danita, Equandolin, Flose, Genetrin, Halabisha, Ignita, Jotrovus, Kendrick, Latrina, Machoda, Nikwisha, Orangello, Pecola, Rubitussin, Six Pack for sure, and Taiwana. The NHC says that in interest of fairness, in 2010, they will use lame white names given to kids born in the 1980s, like Travis, Trevor, Jeremiah, Jessica, etc. One scientist we encountered while he was on his way to diversity classes and who wishes to remain anonymous, quipped that eventually we will name hurricanes after Bigfoot names. He asked, whatever happened to real names like John, Mike, Linda, and Sue? Now on to the third news article. This one occurs September 9th, 1965, in New Orleans. Hurricane Betsy slammed into Louisiana with winds peaking up to 125 miles per hour. The Turner family remained in their home during the storm, hoping that they could ride through the storm unharmed. Hurricane Betsy, though, was a Category 3 hurricane, which breached the levees around Lake Pontchartrain. The entire surrounding area began to flood. During the flooding, the Turner family began to hear a cat meowing beneath the floorboards. At first, they ignored the pleas, but eventually they gave in to the violent meows and tried to locate it. Since the family could not bear to hear the cat drown, the children were ordered to lie down on the floorboards and search for the cat by listening. Ultimately, the children decided the cat was underneath the washer machine. Meher Turner, the father, then moved the washer machine to the side and cut a hole open in the floorboards. As soon as the hole was opened, the cat jumped through hole to safety in the home of the Turners. Finally, we have reached our last article. This one occurs Friday, March 9th, 2010. Hurricane Cecile tore through a small town in America's South today, leaving thousands without homes and many missing. The appalling name Cecile was unbelievably powerful and destructive, and local residents, or ex-residents, have called for a change in the naming rules for hurricanes in general. The mayor of the town came out today in favor of the changes. I think it is terrible that some people may have lost their livelihoods, their homes, maybe even their family members to something called Cecile. The mayor screamed at reporters, "This has to change." The changes have been suggested are based on the strength of the hurricane. It's all very well for it to be named Cecile if it's a light breeze, says a local man who lost his business to the hurricane. But I can't go telling people my uncle was taken by Cecile. It sounds ridiculous. A vote has been taken in, what's left of the town hall, by what's left of the citizens. They have voted unanimously to change the name of Hurricane Cecile to Hurricane Vlad the Impaler. Okay, now we are going to take a caller and see which they think is the true story. Hello, you are now on the air with Red Alert. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
Hi, I'm Eugene from Saratoga Springs.
Okay then, Eugene. Which two of our four fascinating stories do you think is true? The choices are A, 15 years with no electricity, B, new hurricane names, C, the cat that lived, and D, Hurricane Cecile.
I think it is the cat that lived and new hurricane names.
Oh, you got one story right with the cat that lived, but the second true story was 15 years with no electricity. Thank you for calling Red Alert, Eugenio. Well, be sure to stay tuned for some music, followed by the story behind hurricane names. listeners. You are back with Red Alert, and we have lots in store for you. Now we're going to talk about hurricanes and climate change. The history of the Earth's climate is an interesting story. It is very difficult to detect such long-term changes, but advances in technology have shown us that the planet has gone through many drastic transformations throughout its 4.5 billion-year history. For some, this is an argument that global warming is nothing to fear. So many factors affect the climate, from the shape of our orbit to gases and winds in the atmosphere, that it is very difficult to pinpoint one cause for climate change. There are many origins for recent changes on our planet, and considering the climate's inconstant history gives reason to question if these changes are unnatural. However, the current level of greenhouse gas concentration in the atmosphere and the rate that it has increased in comparison with the timeline of human development and technology proves that this case of climate change can be blamed on us. It is time for humans to stop impeding the Earth's natural processes and avoiding this issue by claiming that it is not our fault. Climatology is a complicated science, and we still have a lot to learn. But the evidence that humans are causing the current warming trend is obvious. I think it is incredibly interesting how incomprehensible and unpredictable the Earth's climate can be. That being said, it is somewhat ridiculous to me that so many humans have inhabited the Earth's most precarious areas. For example, the city of New Orleans, located in a dangerous hurricane region with many of its buildings below sea level. Elaborate technologies like levees attempt to protect us from powerful and volatile planets, but would it not be much safer and smarter to simply avoid interrupting the Earth's natural systems? Why do we willingly place ourselves in such an insecure location and situations while still attempting to make our environments as predictable as possible? From an anthropological perspective, it is interesting that humans knowingly subject themselves to this kind of danger, yet can still greatly fear the Earth's unpredictable nature. How can we rationally develop cities the way that we have without implementing a precautionary principle? Hurricane experts have different opinions about whether global warming has already affected hurricanes or will only do so in the future. Yet, they all agree that as many people move to the coast and as the world population grows, hurricanes will only exact a greater and greater toll as time goes on. So until we get started and invest in protecting our communities and respect the dangerous and unstable nature of the coast, we can expect more disasters, more bad news from hurricanes, cyclones, and typhoons around the world. All right, listeners, here's some music, and we will be back with frequently asked questions, followed by safety procedures so you don't die.
Hey, y'all, you're listening to Red Alert on 91.1 FM WSPN. I'm DJ Magic Brown, one of the Masters of Disasters, and now it's time for me to prepare you for a hurricane disaster. Some of you listeners may not think this concerns you, since there is probably no chance that a hurricane will strike New York. Well, you're wrong. In fact, there have been major hurricanes that have struck New York, and there will be more. We've just been lucky. For example, in 1821, a major hurricane made a direct hit on Manhattan. Hardly anybody was prepared. Soon before the full storm hit, residents reported a thick wall of gray fog over 20 feet over the water. This wall was actually a storm surge that swept in and killed those unlucky enough to flee. Sea levels rose 13 feet on average. Just east of the eye of the hurricane, which passed 55 miles east of New York City, gusts exceeded 200 miles per hour. The only thing that saved the city, according to coastal geologist Nicholas Koch from Queens College, was the low tide at the time. New Orleans is a sinking city, and it almost disappeared after Katrina. However, it was off the coast of New York that an island actually did disappear, for good. I'm talking about Hawaii. The island, shaped like a pig, was a mile-long barrier. In the 1800s, this island was used as a getaway for the wealthy, where there were bathhouses, saloons, and beaches. But on August 23, 1893, a Category 2 hurricane rushed in and wiped out the island. There was a 30-foot storm surge which swept over the island and through Brooklyn, killing people and knocking down man-made structures in its path. In 1938, another hurricane, nicknamed the Long Island Express, rushed in and wreaked havoc across the island. Another Category 3 hurricane in 1954, Carol, barely missed the city and went on over to Providence, Rhode Island, where it flooded downtown with 12 feet of water. Analysts say that major hurricanes hit New York on average every 75 years. Now, it doesn't take a math expert to realize that we are overdue. Just in the time period from 2000 to the present, 17 minor hurricanes have occurred in New York, most of them only affecting Long Island. But if a major hurricane did hit New York City, how would all those people evacuate? And how would the city recover the flooded subway system? For those of you who are still skeptical, however, try these estimates on for size. According to the United States Landfalling Hurricane Probability Project, there is a 28% chance that a tropical storm or hurricane will hit New York in 2010, and 99.9% chance one will hit in the next 50 years. There's an 8% chance that a major hurricane, Category 3 or higher, will hit New York in 2010, the 90% chance one will hit in the next 50 years. I don't know about you, but those probabilities are high enough for me to take the time to learn safety procedures. The good thing is, at least here in Saratoga, we don't have to worry about storm surges, but the threat of a hurricane still remains, and it pays to be prepared. So let's look at the procedures that are guaranteed to increase your chance at surviving, or at least preventing injury. The most important advice is to listen on the radio or television for hurricane warnings. It never hurts to be ready for an evacuation, usually a drive 20 to 50 miles away. Just so you know what one may sound like and what they include, here's an example of a real hurricane warning. Calling the American Red Cross chapter to learn of evacuation routes and any safe shelters is also a wise idea. Next, here is a list of emergency supplies you should have with you wherever you may end up. Flashlight and extra batteries, portable battery-operated radio, first aid kit and manual, emergency food and water, non-electric can opener, essential medicines, cash and credit cards, any valuables, and sturdy shoes. To secure your house, the most important step is to protect your windows, because once the windows break, the storm literally enters your house, and the true havoc begins. To prevent this, having and closing permanent shutters is best. Otherwise, cut plywood panels to fit and screw over all windows and/or glass. Another way hurricane winds enter your house is by tearing the roof off. You can actually buy hurricane straps and clips, attaching them at the roof truss and top of the stud walls. Another vulnerable spot is the garage door. At its weakest spots, install horizontal and vertical bracing onto each panel. Outside your house, trim all dead or low-lying branches from trees and remove any loose objects from the yard, like a wheelbarrow or bicycle. Also, to protect your house, check with your home insurance company on their policies regarding hurricane damage, including floods. Oftentimes, insurance companies cover wind damage, but not water damage. A hurricane, unfortunately, would be considered water damage. Be aware that a hurricane watch is a possible hurricane more than 24 hours away. A hurricane warning is one that will most likely arrive within 24 hours. If you are unable or unwilling to evacuate, here is what to do. Obviously, never use an elevator during any storm, but you hopefully know that already. Wherever you may be inside, stay away from any windows, doors, or glass. A basement works well, for example. Also, if the hurricane is really harsh or you have to evacuate, turn off the electricity and the main water valve. Realize that the electricity may be unavailable for days or even weeks. You can fill buckets or your tub with water and use that to flush waste down the toilet. As far as food goes, keep the fridge and freezer closed. Eat the perishable foods first and leave the canned food for later. Here in Skidmore campus, Campus Safety has a shelter-in-place emergency plan that would be in effect for small or unexpected hurricanes. Let's see how it compares to what you've already learned. Go inside or stay inside a building. Do not use elevators. Shut and lock all windows and doors. Turn off the heat, air conditioning, or ventilation system if you have local controls for these systems. Close fireplace dampers. Quickly locate supplies you may need, food, water, radio, etc. If possible, go to a room or corridor where there are no windows. If possible, monitor main college webpage, radio, or television for further information and instructions. Do not call campus safety unless you are reporting a life-threatening situation. So, very similar, right? If you have any questions about Skidmore's emergency plans, make sure to shoot a call over to campus safety. By now, you have learned the safety ropes and you know the probability of a hurricane in New York. By gaining this knowledge, you have increased your chances at surviving a hurricane and protecting your belongings. Stay tuned for more stormy music on Red Alert.
All right, folks, that about wraps up this episode. You've heard some stories, learned how hurricanes worked, and learned how to prepare yourself in case of a surprise storm. By now, you're hurricane experts, and we hope you spread the word. This is DJ Magic Brown, DJ Rose, DJ Aubrey, and DJ J Dove saying peace out. Stay tuned next week for an episode about volcanoes on Red Alert, brought to you by the Masters of Disaster.
I was tired of my lady. We'd been together too long. Like a worn out recording of a favorite song. So while she lay there sleeping, I read the paper in bed. And in the personal columns, there was this letter I read.